Good evening, and welcome to the Yellow Dogs. It's always so nice to sit with you. I say it the same thing over and over every week, but I mean, just gets nice. I can't help but just let you know how nice it is to sit with you. So, thank you for showing up. Leonard Cohen wrote a famous line in a song that reminded us that there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. I remember when he died in 2016. I remember because we were at an Anantuktan, a week-long meditation, and his sangha in Austin happened to have some of the Flatlanders attend. And so Jimmy Dale Gilmore and Butch
Hancock
were there, and when it was announced, there were other, I'm sure, their associates there, and a group of them got together and sang Hallelujah, and it was just so sweet. So, and Butch, we would always see him at these retreats, and he would write his songs, and sometimes, at least twice, I know once he sang what he wrote, and then another time he just read it, you know, as poetry.
He wrote it during the retreat.
Yeah, he wrote it during the retreat, and inspired all of us. So, we're perfectly imperfect, and is it possible that we let the truth in more readily when we're breaking or suffering? Yeah. So, not too long ago, I had COVID, and I know a lot of you did too, and it's the first time I had been really sick for a long, long time. I thought I was going to die for sure. But I didn't feel holy in the least bit. But what I did feel was the pain, the suffering. The suffering that I had really forgotten. And so the pain offered a direct experience to enable me to see how vulnerable I was. I was a crybaby too. You look at me and I'd just cry. And I'd say, I'm not a crier. I don't know why I'm crying, but I'm not a crier. But feeling helpless and confused and alone in my suffering, it's a wake-up call. Sure, it was a big wake-up call. And so no one can share those moments intimately with us as we can with oneself. And that gift of suffering opened again the possibility that things are not as they appear. And so we begin to look at our lives closer because we're beginning to get to know ourselves in a different way, a different perspective. I don't know, I could be wrong about that, but most adults I know are adult children from a dysfunctional past. So it's not easy. It's not easy to have a difficult past. It's quite common. So What makes it dysfunctional? Well, just varied, as you well know. But our patterns of behaviors and unhealthy sense of identity had their roots in childhood. That's the way of things. And it, even today, the sorrows seem to come from the past for me. Sometimes present moment suffering is pretty obvious at the moment. So sometimes I feel like my triggers are just stuck in time. And they just repeat themselves, and I fall in the same old hole, and I get out and say, nope, it's not going to happen again. And lo and behold, it does again and again. And so I have to remind myself that I am perfectly imperfect, that I am a human being, and that to honor myself and my way of life and what life has to offer is very precious. And I, for personally, that's exactly what happened as I was practicing. One becomes more intimate with oneself. And so Tara says we have to face those. Sounds like a good psychologist, doesn't it? She says our emotions are like screaming children. And it's just simply not true that time alone will heal them. And that's not going to all of a sudden go away. So sometimes over time they become more entrenched and we continue to ignore them. And so one of the gifts of suffering is when we meditate, the unconscious will arise and arrive. We can no longer hide from them, even though they can be real good excuses for not wanting to face them. So we're practicing being still and quiet and allowing what is stuck in us to rain on them. Recognize, allow, investigate. This nurtures our understanding of what is actually happening within, the truth of what is happening within. So, and I remember I was shocked when I read this. Jack says it. He says, awareness does not automatically transfer itself from one dimension of our life to another. He says, compartments remain in the areas where our fears, our wounds, and our defenses are the deepest. He found that out personally because, you know, he's a clinical psychologist, but coming back from Asia and being a teacher and having to face where he was born, he realized that he needed help from others. We all need each other's help and support. And so in comparing, Jack says, practices of psychotherapy and meditation, he says those are to be recognized as techniques, just tools for learning, not ends in themselves. So I find this practice sometimes can really, really open my heart. Randy and I have been, I should say Randy has, I've been listening, reading the Heart Sutta for quite some time in the morning and in the evening. And it just enables the heart to open. Just It's just magical. But then, what do? We have to get up and do the dishes. Where's the magic? Well, I understand that there can be the magic, but it has everything to do with how we relate to all parts of our life. And we're conditioned to departmentalize it. I like this, I don't like that, a little bit more of that, a little less of that. We're pushing against nature. We're pushing against our true nature. And so that's where suffering occurs. And once we get to know the mind and body, when we scan the body, and it's the first foundation of mindfulness, mindfulness of the body, we begin to understand. For me, it was like I was a walking, talking head until, of course, I was shown, taught, practiced whole body awareness. And probably the best way, there's other ways, is scanning the body. And we can do that right before we sit. Do it any time that we feel disjointed. I like that word. So, where am I? So it's all encompassing in the sense that meditation just doesn't occur when we are formally we're supposed to pay attention and do certain things. Only when we sit on the cushion, our teachers taught that and reminded us that our everyday life gives us many, many, many opportunities to look at it closely. That's why we train in recognizing and allowing, and sometimes that's enough. But we're bringing consciousness to our everyday life that we may not have before. And we have these wonderful Western minds that are conditioned for so many things that are not very conducive to meditation. So that's why we have to study the mind along with the body. We study the true nature of the mind, and we begin to see its effect on us all through the day. Because we practice listening to the mind more than listening to ourselves. Why? We don't know ourselves. Now you may, but I didn't know myself. I thought I knew myself. No, it took a lot of time and effort to see what I did not want to see. And so truth arises. Then we have it out on the table. Then we don't stuff it. Then we know, okay, this is what I'm dealing with. No longer denying it, no longer stuffing it, no longer being afraid, but facing it. And that's one of the things that our meditation teaches us. We don't push anything away. Mm-mm. I mean, we have been conditioned to that, but then we remind ourselves, no, this is good stuff. Seems bad, but it's good stuff in the sense that it's grist for the mill all day long. Day after day. So we began paying a very deep attention to our lives. And with this particular path, it's not the only path, but this particular one defines or really sets us up of how we can benefit from learning about the good and the bad and the ugly, about the whole body. Learning that whole body awareness, that perception, is unlike just being aware of what the mind is telling us. I mean, no wonder we're so confused. Because we believe the mind until we begin to check. Do you think the mind's always right? Well, you know, let's start checking that. So we start watching our minds, and lo and behold, you think, holy moly, you know? Such nonsense. You're just full of nonsense. And I have said that to you before because I've watched my mind. It still does it. I'll see something or hear something, and it's not complete. You know, I'm just getting part of the story. I just make it up because my mind, if I'm doing this through my mind wants a solution. Okay? But my heart says there's no problems. So, Sigmund Freud says, the whole purpose of his work was to enable people to learn how to love and how to give meaningful work to the earth. It sounds like he knew what his hard work was all about. And he also said, this is not a quote, but it was implied, he said he did not come to the law of relativity through the thinking mind. So from where did it come? Yeah.
You mean Einstein?
I mean, Einstein says he did not. Who did I say?
Sigmund Freud.
Oh, what do I know? Thank you.
It's a Freudian slip.
Freudian slip. Stephen had this look on his face like, thank you. I see, that's a wake-up call. You're paying attention. So that's Einstein that said he did not come to the law of relativity through the thinking mind. There's a place more intelligent than the mind. And we begin to touch it. We begin to see the laws of nature as the truth. So, Rilke says, for one human being to love another, that is perhaps the most difficult task of all. The work for which all other work is but preparation. If we do live with open hearts, even a little bit of the time, we have responsibility with that precious, precious open heart. And the most important responsibility is getting to know ourselves first and foremost. Because then that process opens us up to all truths. In some sense, our human ego is terribly afraid of letting go of what is known and familiar to us and becoming great inside. That would be like trying to leave one's planet falling into an endless space where there is no sign of possible place to land. So it feels safer to stay on the same planet, even if that might not be the best So Buddha himself came up with a name for the ultimate truth. And it's not what you think. It's not what I think. And it's something that's most confusing. But it's important to hear it. And that is emptiness. No self. Non-self. And it sounds crazy because we're thinking about it through our crazy mind. But again, that is a path to complete happiness. We have to touch it sooner or later. It's a must. Okay, with that, when I say that emptiness, it's an emptiness that connects us all. It's experiential. It can't be hardly even talked about. It can only be experienced. But we're touching it when we're quiet and we're still and we are opening ourselves to other possibilities beside what the mind has taught us throughout the years. Thank you, sweet yogis. And now Randy will come over and we can open it up to you.